security program on spreadsheets, new regulations piling up, an audit dread. It's time for Vanta. Vanta automates security and compliance, brings evidence into one place, and cuts audit prep by 82%. Less manual work, clearer visibility, faster deals, zero chaos. Call it compliance or call it compliance. Get it? Join the 15,000 companies using Vanta to prove trust. Get started at vanta.com/calm.
AI isn't just changing how we work. It's changing how we define ourselves. And if you've spent your life achieving, pushing, producing, what happens when that's no longer who you are? Today, we're talking about what happens when achievement stops working and how sleep, stillness, and reconnecting to your natural rhythms might be the key to finding your purpose again. I'm joined by Megan Mazzocco, Conscious Expansion Officer at Wellbeing Design, Wellbeing X Design. Megan, it's so good to have you here. Welcome back. I would love to start here because I think this is so what so many people are feeling right now, but they can't quite put words into it. So as you know, we just talked about AI is taking over tasks, roles, and even entire industries. But what I'm seeing is that people are losing their identity. Why is this happening and why is this hitting people so hard?
Yeah. So thank you so much, Lisa, for having me and for you and Stacey for having me back. It's an honor and a privilege to address your audience, especially about these time sensitive and critical topics. I was speaking about sleep and stillness in relationship to achievement as a socially acceptable form of addiction and how we should really be treating work like a sport. Between then and now, 30,000 people at Oracle, at one company, lost their jobs to AI. And So I had to step back and take a broader view of what is happening when you no longer have achievement as a socially acceptable form of addiction or a mobility response. And how can you reframe your mindset of who you are and what you're doing when you're not necessarily getting paid to work, which is what society has inculcated us in as that's productive, that's legitimate, that is significant. And really, right now, AI is not a punishment. It's a portal, and it does bring us back to beyond job titles, beyond professions, professional identity, like who are we really? And that is such an existential question for so many, especially high achievers, who are now finding themselves displaced by AI. It can create so much overwhelm. And so as a life coach, as a health coach, as a trauma-informed somatic coach, my job here now is to really say, how can you ground yourself in being human? How can you begin to reconnect with yourself to find out who you really are, what you want now, and why you're here. And I think the best tool to do that is to start with sleep.
Yes, I love this. I'm so interested to get into this conversation. But before we do, I just want to say that an observation that I've had in my own life when I was trying to break free of the conditioning that I was brought up with, most of us are brought up with the, you know, you work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and then you have your weekends off. I found that Sundays is like a day where I can totally be. I don't have to do anything because it's been conditioned in me that Sunday is a day of rest. And energetically, most of the world is resting on Sundays and doing their spiritual work. And I often have days and time off now, and I still struggle with that idea of I'm not working today. It's a Tuesday, and I feel almost like this guilt about it. Like I need to be pushing myself, and I'm so aware of it, but it's still there. I think that's going to be the most difficult part for people is to break free of these patterns. But I love what you said because you said you've achieved yourself into a sleep-related health crisis. Tell everybody what that means and what happened.
Okay, so first, I want to double click on a couple of things that you just said about your own experience because I think that's really important and will resonate with our audiences. And the first thing is work has and achievement has become uncoupled from success. And we have been raised with kind of these Puritan values of hard work equals significant success. And now that is broken. And the other thing you were mentioning about your ability to really rest and allow yourself rest on Sundays, because that's what the collective is doing. So I am allowed to as well. And sometimes what happens when we don't have language for something is we don't know how to survive it. So people who dreaded going back to work on Monday, we started calling it the Sunday scaries, right? So now what do you call it when you're not working on a Tuesday and you're scared to relax or you're scared to reconnect with yourself, or you are actually doing work, but it's just not paid work. So you're afraid to define it as significant work when it really is. So you back to your question, and bringing language to this uncoupling, you know, of achievement doesn't necessarily, and hard work doesn't necessarily equal success. I was on the achievement train and I was chugging along at high speed as a journalist working from home full time, traveling, you know, 50 to 30% of the time, and parenting all day, two small children, and then working all night long to meet my deadlines. And I told myself that I could sleep when I was on business trips overseas. And, you know, that was my time. But really, I never stopped because my peers were also inculcated into this culture. I would say cult, put the emphasis on the first syllable, this culture of overwork, overperforming, overachievement. And it just was a train to disaster. I used to think I was immune to burnout, but I found myself at one point in the emergency room. I felt like I had bugs crawling up my legs. The tops of my thighs were going numb, and I had lava lamp-like fluid collecting between my skin and my organs of my torso. And the emergency room doctors said, "There's nothing wrong with you. Just go home and don't eat so much salt." I was in this sleep-related medical mystery illness for 18 months, going from doctor to doctor and specialist to specialist. And not once did one ask me about how I was sleeping. So I never thought that that sleep deprivation was part of the equation, but it completely was. I came to find out once I had a functional medicine doctor who prescribed me medication, meditation, and sleep, that sleep is the number one predictor of health outcomes, and not just physical health, but mental health outcomes. And so when I say everything starts with sleep, everything does. And it's not just physical health, mental health. It's also the quality of our relationships, which the quality of our lives is the quality of our relationships. So why wouldn't you bring your awareness and your attention to sleep hygiene, and to your circadian health? It's a really great way to just reconnect with your own body. And because we are on this circadian clock or this 24-hour rhythm, it also forces us to connect ourselves back to nature. And that is something that we've been completely cut off from because of the built environment. Our brains and our bodies evolved to spend 100% of our time outdoors in nature. And now humans spend 90% or more of their lives inside four walls and a ceiling. And it disconnects our body's clocks. Our suprachiasmatic nucleus is the part of the brain that actually is the body clock, from light, from humidity, from temperature, from the seasons, and from all of this biophilia that we really need to actually support our circadian health, our biorhythms, and sleep.
I want to just touch on something that you said, because I think so many people can relate to that. First of all, thank you for sharing your story. There's so many people you hear out there saying that they feel like they're doing everything right, but they're still seeing their body shutting down, and they're going into the medical system and they're being told that all of their labs look great. That must have been a really challenging spot for you to be in. And it's such a helpless spot too, because you have this life and you're quote unquote achieving, and you're achieving success according to how the world defines success, but you don't feel well and your body is shutting down. And that is such a disconnect. I just find it incredible that we often look for these answers to keep supporting our bad habits when it comes down to like just simplifying everything. Right? Like the being prescribed the meditation and the sleep and the supplements, right? Like it's so simple and it's so basic, but it's like that's what the human body needs. We often overcomplicate everything. I think I read a statistic that one in three people are sleep deprived.
Yeah.
And it's no wonder that like anxiety is rising through the roof. And I know that when I don't sleep, I cannot produce at all. And so it's like this vicious cycle of like constant anxiety and then not producing and then worry. And it just snowballs and gets worse and worse and worse. And I can totally relate. The right side of my body actually went numb when I was in a time when my body was finally saying, you can't do this anymore. Enough is enough. And sure enough, I was trying to push through one of these yoga classes. And finally everything came crashing down for me too. It's crazy how we don't do anything about it until it's at that moment, right? Like humans are, we're resilient, but
Just like the Bessel van der Kolk book says, the body keeps the score. And
yes.
it's so interesting when we talk about our propensity to numb out, that guess what happens in turn? Our bodies go numb,
Right.
literally. And I think we've had enough of that. And we're just like, I just want to feel something. I just want to feel deeply. And the way that this all transpired in terms of me learning about sleep is because I was still a diehard journalist and an overachieving type A. So I researched everything on sleep and I found exactly what you mentioned, which is that the World Health Organization has declared sleep deprivation an epidemic in every industrialized country. And
Wow.
the CDC in this country concurs that one in three adults is sleep deprived. And that means when you wake up at baseline anxiety because when you're sleep deprived, it raises norepinephrine, which is the neurotransmitter and hormone that raises your blood pressure, your blood sugar, and your heart rate. So immediately, automatically, your resilience is down, your immunity is down, and also your emotional resilience is down. And you've got brain fog because part of your brain is still going, what's wrong? Something's wrong. What's wrong? Because of the elevated blood pressure, blood sugar, and heart rate. So you're just not really there. And sustained chronic sleep deprivation can lead to extreme anxiety and even depression. The US Preventative Congress recommends that all physicians they screen for any patients 65 and under for anxiety because it is so common. But it makes sense that 30% of the population would have anxiety because they're sleep deprived. So,
Right.
how did we get into this mental health dumpster fire? It's probably because we're not sleeping. And unfortunately, in the Western medical model of medical education, doctors only get 5 hours of sleep
That's
training.
wild. That's wild. Yeah. And they're looking after us and doing all these operations, and that's wild.
Yeah. And the thing
Yeah.
you said about looking to someone to kind of give you permission to continue on that self-destructive path, I realized that I had been giving my power away, my authority over my body to these quote-unquote medical professionals. And I actually figured out what was wrong with me by watching YouTubes of people with my same symptoms.
Yeah, it comes down to that relatability. That's wild.
Yeah, that's another way that the system is broken, right? But that's what we've
Absolutely.
been conditioned into. And the other part that I wanted to touch on about really coming back to our bodies and coming back to who we really are and how human bodies were designed to co-create and co-be in nature. A lot of the time, we don't realize that we're part of nature. But when you start to pay attention to nature and you start to get in this frame set, this mindset, or this framework of, oh my gosh, like these are all miracles around me. Like 24/7. And then you start to realize, oh, wait, I'm part of nature. That's when the mindset flips. It inverses to I'm part of nature. I'm inherently worthy to exist because I'm an integral part of this. The system. But sometimes it's scary to really assign yourself, that kind of love, that kind of beauty, that kind of awe, that kind of divinity. So when you observe it first in nature and you re observe yourself in relation to nature, that really starts to get into your mindset as, oh, wow, like nature's valuable, and so am I. And so I'm talking about nature so much because it is so much a huge part of our circadian health and our sleep hygiene. And we don't realize it, and nobody talks about it. So that
Yeah,
is.
actually praised for like, oh, you pulled an all-nighter to get this project done. Well, I stayed up two nights in a row. Like, it's like people start competing over this ridiculousness, right? I would love to, Megan, talk about the crisis that's happening right now that you illustrate so beautifully. And so we talk about the hustle lifestyle as being a coping mechanism. And so you talk about achievement as a coping mechanism. With AI coming in, AI is literally replacing jobs. And people are now left wondering, who am I? And they're feeling so disconnected. It's like you hear stories of Olympic athletes who, they win the gold medal, but they wake up the next day and they're depressed because they don't know who they are anymore. So what happens, Megan, when this coping mechanism disappears overnight? Like, what is the crisis going on in the world right now?
Yeah, so it's the loss of job identity, professional identity, achievement, and it's kind of like an achievement hangover, or what do all my accomplishments mean right now if I'm not putting them into active work, active paid work? Well, what we need now, because AI has come in and taken over the role of achievement. And achievement is now kind of boring because
Yeah.
it's happening at a breakneck pace without the intervention or the guidance of humans. And so that leaves us to actually synthesize our human knowledge, our human experience, our accomplishments into wisdom. And this is what the world needs right now, is what is your human wisdom? What is your felt sense in your body? Because AI cannot do that. AI does not have a body. AI is disembodied and it's performing functions of consciousness, but it is not consciousness. And so, because we are human, because we have our connection to consciousness, and because we have bodies, we have wisdom. Inner wisdom that cannot be replicated by AI or any machine or any disembodied energetic entity. And so this is where you start to go inwards. This is where you start to feel something. And this is where you synthesize your knowledge and your experience into wisdom. And we need people right now who are owning their wisdom. And when we sleep, it actually takes all of our short-term memory and any current events or constraints, and it mixes it with everything that we've ever learned or ever known before. And this creates new creative solutions, again, that could never happen in an AI machine. And it also helps to synthesize the knowledge and the experience and maybe the current day challenge or constraint into something that only you can unlock. Happens during sleep.
That's amazing. So you're saying sleep restores clarity. Essentially, what you're saying is that sleep is the foundation for everything.
Yeah, sleep is the foundation for everything, for physical health and repair and recovery, and then for mental health It also is the time where your body cleans out your brain with the lymphatic system. It's the only time that can happen. You cannot take a supplement for that. And just sleeping 2 hours less, like someone who would normally sleep 8 hours sleeps 6 hours, there's 5% more of deposits in the brain of proteins and amyloids that are associated with poor cognitive health outcomes, including Alzheimer's. So it's really important that we sleep as a biological imperative, but also when we want to achieve clarity, when we want to achieve creativity that is uniquely locked inside of us and the matrix of our experience.
Love.
That's where that comes from. And also just this getting in touch with your relationship with yourself through sleep hygiene is so powerful because when you hold boundaries around sleep and rest, you're also increasing your self-trust and your self-love and your relationship with your body. And that enhances that compassion and that empathy. It enhances your relationships with others because in an achievement economy, relationships have become quite transactional. And when you remove that achievement, that professional identity status, relationships become core to who we are and our existence. And sometimes that's really scary when you don't know how to do relationships yet, you know? And so
No,
that's why,
totally.
yeah. So that's why I think a great jumping off point is your relationship with yourself through sleep and your relationship with your circadian health through nature. And it's kind of like training wheels for relationships.
Right. Would love to talk to you about what you say about designing sleep. So you don't just tell people to sleep more, you talk about designing sleep. Megan, can you talk about what that means?
Absolutely. Most, I guess, regimens or sleep measurement tools, they give a one size fits all kind of solution, which really hinges on behavioral compliance. That's not what we're doing here. I wrote a book called The Sleep System, 28 Days to Better Sleep, as a pragmatic guide to designing the sleep that you love. And it is 21 days of evidence-based, scientifically notated sleep hygiene practices. And it is analog on purpose because there's no algorithm and there's no starting point that fits the entire 30% of the population who are sleep deprived. What designing sleep means is it's user-centered design. It starts with an N of one. That is you. And the N of one, what do you do when you're designing something? You ask the end user, what's your lifestyle like? How can we accommodate it? How can we reduce friction? How can we increase and enhance your ability to do sleep? And so that is where designing sleep based on your needs, your lifestyle, your chronotype, the temperature that you sleep best at, that's where that comes in the sleep system. Because after each sleep hygiene tip, there are prompts for you to journal and notice about yourself. What is really affecting how you sleep, how quickly you fall asleep, how well you stay asleep, and how you feel when you wake up in the morning? So, this is a citizen science project that is a practice in basically laying the context which is the foundation for any good design. So there's no rules, there's no parameters, there's no behavioral compliance. It is simply an exercise in noticing yourself. And that is where you get the information to design your sleep hygiene around. And not every sleep hygiene practice is for every person. But as you go through the sleep system and you're noticing what types of sleep hygiene tips impact your sleep personally, by the end of the month, you figured out what is going to move the needle in your design of sleep. And it's not just about when you wake up and when you go to sleep. It's about how are you in the morning about getting outside, getting morning sunlight, moving your body during the day. It's about at nighttime, when are you able to start to wind down? When are you dimming the lights in your room? It's about the design of your bedroom. Are you having blackout shutters, blackout curtains, and an independent thermostat that will lower the temperature to your ideal sleep temperature, which a lot of science has shown that 65 degrees is actually the ideal temperature to sleep at. But again, these are different sleep hygiene suggestions for all different people. But when you use a sleep system and a design system, you're designing specifically for you, for yourself, for the end user, which is you. And the other part about this design or this systems thinking is it is a 24-hour design because our sleep hygiene and our circadian health and our circadian biorhythms are a 24-hour clock. So again, there's different things that you can do all throughout the day and evening that will contribute to your ability to sleep.
Well, I think that's so important. I like how you individualize it. I know a lot of people who they're not, they don't call themselves morning people, they're evening people. And so does this give people the ability to design their own sleep schedule based on, like, so you're saying if someone really is a night owl, that they can design their whole sleep schedule around that? Or is there still a specific way that people should be designing their sleep schedule? Maybe you could talk to us a little bit more about that and tell us about yours so we can have a real live example of what a sleep schedule looks like.
So your chronotype is whether you're a night owl or whether you are a morning person. And there's no right or wrong. Your chronotype is perfect for you. And although we have been conditioned otherwise, it's perfectly fine to design your entire day, your entire week, your career, and your lifestyle around your chronotype, because sleep is the root and the foundation of all health. So why wouldn't you want to optimize your lifestyle and your life for your chronotype? And if, I mean, some people say that sounds crazy, but I would say it sounds crazy not to, because if you don't have health, if you don't have optimal health, you don't have optimal longevity, everything else falls away. So I would say, yeah, that is the number one thing to do. And for me, in terms of, oh my gosh, trying to figure out like what was my chronotype and when did I fall asleep best and when did I wake up best, I think that it may have taken the pandemic for me to figure that out, to not have to be somewhere at a certain time that allowed me to figure that out. And also what I did in terms of reconnecting my circadian health to nature was I devoted myself to every day, every morning watching the sunrise and every evening watching the sunset. And it was always beautiful. It was stunning. It was always breathtakingly beautiful. And it was unique. Every single day, there's a different sunrise. And every single day, there's a different sunset. And I think that we take this for granted, that each day has the signature of its own two fingerprints.
Right.
And it's really that information from nature that started to shape my sleep hygiene and my chronotype, which was, like an hour or two after sunset, I was ready to crash. Then my body would wake up with the first sign of morning light. And I didn't have blackout curtains at the time, and I still don't, but I sleep with a silk eye mask. So our skin still has light receptors. So I will wake up feeling rested at 6 a.m. with light starting to come in, especially this time of year. It's kind of funny in the winter time, I honestly tend to sleep more because there's more dark. I also tend to eat less because there's less, activity. You're in the winter in the north, you're kind of more in a hibernation state.
Yeah, totally. We're like bears.
Yeah. So I think that was really the most powerful part of my personal experience in redesigning my sleep around and getting to know my chronotype. And I think that's why I have such this powerful theory about being back in nature and being designed to be in nature and using that as the foundation of our circadian health.
Yeah, for sure. So you also talk about the seven types of rest. Can you break down what those are?
Yes. And this is also pretty tough for people who are like, oh, rest is just sleep and that's lazy. No, you need these seven kinds of rest in order to consistently achieve optimal restorative sleep architecture. So,
right, because some people think they're resting, but they're not, right? Like, it's so important. So I'm excited for you to break this down for us.
And rest does not mean doom scrolling, binge watching on Netflix.
I'm triggered right now. I'm just kidding.
Or zoning out to Candy Crush. That is not rest. Your brain is still highly engaged and highly aroused when you are doing any of those activities. So that is not, that's actually fatiguing. And that's why we have so much screen fatigue. It's not just Zoom fatigue, it's screen fatigue. But the seven kinds of rest are first physical rest or passive rest. So that's like laying in a hammock, getting a massage, and also sleep. The second kind of rest is mental rest. It's taking a break from decision-making fatigue or problem solving. And then the third kind of rest is emotional rest. And emotional rest is really when you have that best friend or that inner metacognitive voice that says, of course you would feel that way. So it's really creating this resonating kind witness for your emotional experience. And if you can't speak to yourself that way yet, speak in a way that you would speak to your best friend or even a child. So that's emotional rest. And then there's spiritual rest. And spiritual rest is kind of getting perspective and realizing that you are uniquely here at this time to contribute to something greater than yourself. And that, you know, starts to create this awe and this wonder and this curiosity and kind of this satisfaction knowing that. And then there's sensory rest. And I always joke that sensory rest is so important, especially for moms of small kids who are like touching them all day and being like, mom, mom, look, look what I can do. Mom, mom, mom. But it's also sensory rest from noise pollution, especially when you live in an urban hub. I mean, noise pollution is the number two cause of death, according to the World Health Organization. Sensory rest is so under like paid attention to because it's invisible kind of, right? But these are invisible forces that are clearly impacting our quality of life. And finally, last but not least, of course, there has to be something in here about relationships. And that is social rest. So take an inventory of your relationships and which ones are nourishing you and which ones are draining you. And then really, not that you have to cancel anybody or go no contact, but it's really up to you to know when you can give from a place of abundance, when you can show up from a place of abundance, or maybe when you need to be the one who is receiving that nourishing relationship, whatever you need at that point. So I highly encourage people when they are having this opportunity, this portal to rest, to take a rest inventory, not just on that social rest, the last one we talked about, but on all seven, and see where are those things missing and where can you supplement in your life now that you have this new space and this new knowledge of the importance of those seven different kinds of rest.
Yeah, I think we often mistake, like you said, watching TV or watching a movie as a form of rest. Truthfully, I honestly think it's because a lot of people can't or have, they struggle. It's not that they can't, they struggle with quietness and stillness because of all of the emotion that it brings up. And it's an uncomfortable feeling. I know quite a few people who are very social, and that's their coping mechanism, is constantly staying busy, being with other people, because being alone triggers something within themselves that they can't quite face. The world is overwhelming and it's noisy, and it is not natural. Like, you go back to, you know, the, I don't know, back in the day when everyone was kind of outside and, you know, hunting for their food, and everything was so simple. People lived so long. You know, it's so interesting to look back in that history. But I do know that, especially now with the coming of AI, a lot of people are struggling with uncertainty and overwhelm. Megan, is there a practical step that you can give the audience? If someone is really overwhelmed right now, what is one thing that they can do today?
I would recommend the reconnecting with nature. I think that that is the most important thing that you can do, and simply choose one. You don't have to watch the sunrise and the sunset. Choose one or the other and put that into your daily ritual and your daily routine. And then the other thing is, there's a very simple practice that you can do offline, unplugged, in nature, and it takes maybe 5 minutes. And it is more restful and more restorative than any amount of screen time or scrolling. And that is 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So what you would do is just go outside or even look out your window and notice five things that you can see. And maybe if you want a little cognitive challenge, you can pick a color and then see, you know, what are the five things I can see in nature that display that color? And then four things that you can touch. So imagine different textures. So maybe grass under your feet, foliage from a plant, bark from a tree, and then three things that you can hear. And again, we did just touch on the fact that silence is really under attack. There's very little silence left in our world and in our lives. And so when you're listening to three things that you can hear, really try to hear nature sounds, whether it's bugs or birds or the wind rustling leaves in the trees. And then two things that you can smell. And maybe you're smelling dirt or you're smelling a rock or you're smelling a flower. Or maybe you're just noticing as you inhale the humidity of the air or the air temperature. So that can count when you're doing the two things you can smell. And then one thing you can taste. And I'm not suggesting that you ingest random things in nature, but if there is something that is safe to ingest, if you have a fruit or a berry or a vegetable garden, like go ahead, or an herb garden, you know, taste that mint or that sugar snap pea or whatever. Otherwise, just really notice what is the last thing that you ate or drank, and how do you perceive it on your palate at this moment? And so that's a really powerful, very simple exercise that will bring you to presence and that will bring you to your body. And then the final thing that I would have people do to really start, if they're overwhelmed, is notice three things that you were glad that you paused and you were still enough to notice those things. And they could be things that AI can never replicate, whether it's the sunrise, the sunset, or what you just saw or heard or felt. But really embrace those three things with gratitude each day. And once you do this activity, just 1 week of this kind of practice can have residual effects on your well-being for 6 months. So wow. Why not try it out, right? It's so simple, but neuroscience has proven that it is incredibly effective to get back in touch with our bodies, with nature, and with our gratitude and our awe for all of those things. And one thing that we didn't touch on that I really want to emphasize as well, because stillness can be hard.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I was just going to ask you about that. It can be so challenging for people, even myself sometimes.
Yeah, is play. And just doing something playful for the sake of playing. And giving yourself permission to play, and whether you're doing some kind of playful movement or dance party or tennis lessons or Zumba or maybe a playful art project like splatter painting or anything that has glitter and sparkles and so whatever makes you happy to play with, like go for it. And that play is a form of stillness because you're in a different, you're using a different social engagement system where it tells your nervous system that you are safe. And that safety is the key, that creating that safety is the key to rest and recovery and healing. So if you can't sit still, play, please.
It's so important to strip ourselves of the seriousness of being an adult and going back to that primal state where we're just innocent. You know, that childlike behavior, that childlike attitude is so empowering. And then it also gives other people permission if they see you doing it to reconnect with themselves in that way. So energizing. I think lastly, what I'd like to ask you, just because we brought it up, is what about the person out there that feels overwhelmed because they are thinking about it and they're like, oh my God, I don't know who I am without my work. Where do they start in this work to, I guess, rediscover themselves?
I would always say start with sleep, start with your relationship to nature, and remember that this is not a punishment, it is a portal. Beginning to increase the capacity of your nervous system to hold discomfort, to hold uncertainty, and to hold chaos. Is a practice. So it's something you have to keep attending to and coming back to. So when you are starting to kind of, I guess the word would be like twitch or think I need to be doing something, notice when that is, notice what you're feeling in your body and write that down. And then also remember, everything else that you do every day that is work. And realize that your contributions energetically, relationally, anything that you're doing is significant and valid work. So you can really start to see yourself differently through using that lens.
Yeah, Megan, this conversation has been so empowering and so enlightening. I feel like it's given people permission to just be human and to be a human, just being instead of doing. Tell us more about the work that you do and where people can find you.
Sure, absolutely. I'm on LinkedIn as Megan Mazzocco. My website is meganmazzocco.com. One of the things that I worked on was this book called The Sleep System, 28 Days to Better Sleep. It's a pragmatic guide to designing the sleep that you love because it uses design thinking and neuroplasticity to deconstruct unhealthy sleep habits and reconstruct a healthy sleep hygiene. And again, it has more than a 28-day shelf life because there is a journal in the back. So it's a really great tool for people to enter into relationship with sleep, with their circadian health, and with themselves and the inner work or the resistant parts that don't want to slow down and don't want to be in stillness and don't want to sleep. And then I also have a group coaching community called The Sanctuary on Patreon. And it's really great to practice health and well-being in community, especially since the loneliness crisis is inevitable in our kind of technologically separated lives. So I would highly suggest checking out the Sanctuary by Wellbeing by Design on Patreon. And then I also help people with one-on-one health coaching and one-on-one life coaching and trauma-informed somatic coaching. And again, it is beyond behavioral compliance. We're working on six layers. Only one of them is behavior. The rest of them are energetic, unconscious, mindset, emotional, and somatic. So, yeah, it's really deep work. It's highly effective work. And I also offer a keynote and executive level workshops about sleep and the city, connecting rest and relationships, the seven kinds of rest, and why we should be treating work like a sport where rest and recovery are equally important as achievement and productivity. So that is where you can find me and what I'm up to.
Amazing. Well, I just think that you're so incredible, and I feel like this is just the tip of the iceberg that we hit on today, and you're going to be joining us for a series, and there's so much more that we're going to be diving into as we continue to explore more of the work that you do. So thank you again for showing up today and bringing so much energy and so much relatability, because the world is struggling right now so much, and there's so much uncertainty, and that's causing people to feel like they should be doing more. But what you're saying is that you should be doing less, essentially. So, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for letting me share my perspectives with your audience. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And to our audience, thank you so much for tuning in. So this conversation is such a powerful reminder that the answer quite often isn't more effort. It's not more pushing, more achieving. It's finally allowing yourself to rest and reconnect and to remember who you actually are underneath all of the doing. So again, Megan, this was incredible. And for everyone listening, her book, The Sleep System, excuse me, and how to work with her will be in the show notes for you to have access to all of what Megan does. And if this episode resonated with you, share it with someone who needs to hear it, because this isn't just about AI. This is what it means to be human. So stay tuned for the next episode, and take care, everyone, and happy sleeping.
Safe journey.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.